Good morning, diners and travelers, and also drinkers in this particular case of the world.
Drinkers? I don't know about
wine
that.
Wine drinkers, particularly.
That sounds a wonderful way to start off a Sunday morning.
And good morning, Peter.
Hey, good morning. And guess surprisingly, we made it back.
Yes.
We spent a wonderful month in Australia, a lot of which we're going to share with you, but...
First, we better say... you're listening to On the Menu.
Oh, yeah, we forgot about that.
Yeah, you're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig.
And listeners in Australia, good day when you wake up tomorrow morning and start listening to the show, and you'll be listening intently to yourselves, I'm sure.
I still couldn't figure that out. Crossing the international dateline twice had me totally bobbled.
Yeah, well, we lost the day on the way over, then we got it back on the way back. It's a long way, but I have to tell you, guys and gals who are listening, it's well worth it. This is a wonderful trip. I can't wait for you to enjoy following in at least some of our footsteps.
It was a splendid trip, and probably really especially interesting was the fact that we had never before been to Western Australia, and we'd never been to the gorgeous Margaret River, which is... I just thought it was probably, it's an iconic landscape for Australia, and probably one of the most beautiful places I've ever been on the face of the earth. That doesn't mean I've been to every place on the face of the earth, but at least I thought it was a very beautiful piece of the country. Maybe you could position it for our listeners.
Well, the first thing you have to understand, I mean, the word I would use about it is blessed. This is a part of the world which has a wonderful climate, winter and summer, lots of sunshine, but also enough cloud and rain so that it prospers agriculturally during a period when, even when there's been a long drought. Nevertheless, there's still enough rain, there's enough water, there's wonderful soil. But amazingly, it was only in 1967 that man first introduced vines into this part of Western Australia, and our first interview seems like a great place to start is with David Honan, who in many ways was one of the founders of the wine industry.
He was
in
a
Western
delight,
Australia.
By the way. I just thought he was totally delightful.
A fascinating guy, founded a winery which became very large and sold it to a very large company. We're going to hear from a little bit later in this segment of the show, but he got off the ground. Now he's back on operating on a much smaller scale, working with his daughter and his brother-in-law, I think, in a new winery as well, and he's going to tell us all about that in the upcoming segment.
It's interesting to have the opportunity to talk to a not only living but a really vibrant young man called David Honan about what happened with wine growing in the Margaret River region of Western Australia, which is where we are today, because he was involved in it almost from the beginning. David, tell us about how that got started here in WA.
It started in 1967, and Bass Felix was the first vineyard planted. And that was the result of a fellow called Dr. Tom Cullity responding to a survey, an independent survey made by John Gladstones.
And John Gladstone, I don't know who that is.
He was an expert on lupins, but a man with a great interest in wine. And he studied climatic records for all of the southwest of Western Australia and concluded that Margaret River had a climate that had some parallels with Bordeaux.
It's hard to imagine. That was only like 40 years ago. That's really quite amazing.
It's pretty amazing if you drive around today. We have, I think, in excess of 100 wineries, and I would say within the region probably 5,000 hectares of grapes.
But David Honan and his brother Mark weren't too far behind, right?
Yeah, there were three wineries followed suit in about 1970. The Cullen family, Mosswood, and Cape Mantell, which was essentially the Honan family.
Then along the way, some things happened to the ownership of Cape Mantell, correct?
Well, Cape Mantell had a... you really have to go back to put this in perspective. It was a region based on dairy farming and forestry, and viticulture was very difficult. There was no supporting infrastructure or industry, and it was a very slow start.
And you said that that you probably started off trying to grow the wrong grape varieties too.
Some were wrong, some were right. There was a very restricted range made available to us, and of those that were made available, we had success with the Bordeaux reds and whites and Chardonnay. Unfortunately, Shiraz was discouraged. It was seen as rather working class, and a couple of renegades, which included Kaimentel, did actually plant it.
And you mentioned in our preamble that Zinfandel was also planted, and lots of other varieties too.
Zinfandel was planted because I'd done my study in California, and when I returned to Australia, they were about to pull out the only Zinfandel planting they had in the Swan Valley. It had, in their estimation, failed as an experiment. We were fortunate to get cuttings from those vines, planted them at Cape Mentelle in 1972, and today Cape Mentelle is seen as the benchmark Zinfandel, not only within Western Australia, but within Australia.
Now, there are also some Southern Rhone varieties that you mentioned, like Grenache and Mourvèdre, which you call Mataro, and they're in the space too, right?
Our climate, while Gladstone's found parallels with Bordeaux, our climate is actually West Coast Mediterranean. That means a lovely, long, dry summer. This obviously gives us the opportunity to expand from those Bordeaux varieties, and at a very early stage within the Cape Mentelle vineyards, I started planting varieties like Grenache, Mataro and Marsan, amongst 16 other varieties that we have planted.
Now, let's fast forward, because you're still in the wine business, but in a totally different space, totally different approach, and doing some really interesting new things just within the last few years.
Well, I call it second generation Margaret River. I quit the day job in 2003. That's with Cape Mentelle Cloudy Bay, and they're getting on very well without me. But it was an opportunity for me to team up with my brother-in-law, Murray McHenry, and my daughter, Freya, who's a very competent young winemaker, to form our own little company, based on the four vineyards that we own within the family, and to start really enjoying making wines as a family.
Now, these were newly planted vineyards, and they're a little bit south of Margaret River, correct?
One goes back to 1984, and that's planted on literally on the banks of the Margaret River. The other three were planted during the late 90s, and they're all south of Margaret River, and mostly on the southerly flowing streams.
And that's where we are at this very moment?
We're at the Rocky Road Vineyard with a very strong northerly aspect, and it fronts onto the Upper Chapman, which flows south into the Blackwood.
Now, these wines carry the McHenry Honen. McHenry's not so hard to spell. Honen is H-O-H-N-E-N. We're drinking a wine now called Three Amigos. Three Amigos, David?
You can't put three varieties on a label without giving it a name. It's just not possible. Indeed, it's even difficult to put two varieties. So with three varieties in this blend, it seemed that Three Amigos would cover the situation quite well.
And you're also making reds?
We actually make a red Three Amigos, which is made from Shiraz, Grenache and Mataro. We also make a wine we call Tiger Country. That's a blend of Tempranillo, Petit Verdot and Graciano.
So you're making something a little bit like a Chateauneuf-du-Pape?
Probably in name only. I think in style it's very Australian, very Margaret River.
So how would you compare that, for example, to a GSM made in the East, like Rosemont or someone like that?
In Margaret River we're a bit cooler than the regions where they're doing the GSMs from McLaren Vale and Barossa. Expect our wine to be slightly less lower in alcohol. Expect the varietal characters to be a little bit more bright. The wines are bright, juicy, exciting, and that's their point of difference.
Now, just popping back to Cape Mentelle, because we know Cape Mentelle is widely available in distribution in the United States. You said Rob Mann is doing a great job still in following in your footsteps.
Rob Mann's a very, very good winemaker, and Cape Mentelle's a fantastic company, and I think it gives people throughout the world a great Margaret River experience. The two wines I can recommend for anybody is the Cape Mentelle blend of Semillon and Sauvignon Blanc, which is an absolute benchmark for the region, and they do a blend of Cabernet and Merlot, which equally is a benchmark and highly respected from this region. Two wonderful experiences.
But at the McHenry Honen end of the scale, your wines are available in distribution. Sadly, listeners, not in the United States, but certainly throughout Australia and also in the United Kingdom, I believe.
Yes, we've got terrific distribution in the UK in that we're not readily available in what they call the multiples, but if you look for us in the specialist high street retailers, that's where we'll be.
I think you said the U.S. market's a little bit too difficult to tackle, but what about, for example, in Japan or potentially in China, another huge potential wine market?
I think to be successful in an export market, you must resource that market. And by resourcing it, I mean going into the market to talk with your potential customers. And I think as a small family company, we must be careful that we resource the markets that we're already in before we start to expand. It'll be a decision for the next generation.
So do you see anything in the future that you can tell us about already, or are you letting your daughter guide that along?
We have four vineyards which cover 120 hectares. Within those vineyards, we've got 16 varieties in commercial quantities. Many of those are replicated throughout our vineyards. So we've got fascinating sites, a great range of varieties, and expect to see from our little company a really fascinating range of wonderful, wonderful wines.
So let's do that again. McHenry, McHenry, Honan, Hohnen. David said he doesn't do computers much, but I bet you can probably tell us what the website is.
www.mchvmchv.com.au.
And I think it's a must. This has been a wonderful history lesson, David. Is there anything you'd like to? Is there something about the development of wines in Margaret River that's sort of like a secret that you'd like to share?
What I often say to people is that drinking regional wines, drinking decent, honest regional wines, is the greatest travel opportunity you'll ever get. You know, for the price of a bottle of wine, you can be transported anywhere in the world. And in the morning you wake up and you're still at home and back at the kitchen table. And it doesn't get any better than that. And Margaret River offers a wonderful travel experience.
So what you'd say to our listeners about Margaret River is pretty simple, right?
Buy a bottle.
Oh, I thought you were going to say come to Margaret River. So there are two alternatives available to you, correct?
The simplest one and the cheapest one is buy a bottle of Margaret River wine. And if you're sufficiently enticed by that bottle of wine, you might one day visit us.
And it would be a wonderful experience. I mean, remember, we just got here. We drove up to your front door, so we haven't seen much of Margaret River. Is it the great experience everybody says it is?
It's a great experience because I think some of the best wines in the world come from some of the most beautiful regions. They have to be temperate in climate, and certainly we have a beautiful climate, beautiful countryside, and friendly people. It offers a great deal.
Well, we're delighted to have started our visit to this region with you, David, so thank you so much for taking this time to talk to us.
You know, it was a surprise, but certainly a pleasant one, that we also had an impromptu lunch there. We got to feast on the very elegant leftovers from the previous day, his brother's wedding reception that was held at the winery. So that was good. Good food, good wine, good companionship. That was wonderful. All right, let's move on now.
Moving on, we made the natural next step, which was to drive just a very short distance from talking to David Hohnen to Cape Mentol, which was the winery that he founded back in 1969, I think it was. And we met Rob Mann, who's now the winemaker, a young man, but a young man who turns out already has an enormous amount of experience, a fascinating story to tell about the winery, which is now owned by Louis Vuitton, Moët Hennessy.
All the luxury brands.
There we go. And this is a luxurious place. But the focus is nevertheless on the subject of making wine.
Rob Mann looks like he's about 25 years old. And I'm sure he's going to say, you're flattering me, but it's really quite amazing to understand that Rob's family's been in the wine business for several generations. And he's the head winemaker at Cape Mentol, one of the best wineries in Western Australia, at a very tender age. Rob, how did all this happen?
How did it happen that I looked like a 25-year-old?
Now, how did it happen that you got to be early so successful in this business?
I guess a history growing up with my family in the vineyards of the Swan Valley in Western Australia. My family are all into winemaking, and it was a natural progression that I realised late in my teens. And once I worked it out, it's been a one-way road ever since. Wine's very much a passion of mine.
And you went to the Ace Academy for winemaking in Australia. That's sort of the Australian equivalent of UC Davis.
Yeah, my uncle went to Roseworthy in 1962, and I graduated there in 1997. So it's at the time it was one of two university courses you could do in Australia for winemaking. There's now probably in excess of a dozen courses you can do, but that was only 10 years ago.
Now, Kidd Mentell is an unusual operation. In a sense, it's a Western Australian winery, but it also has some financial strength behind it.
Yeah, we're a winery founded in 1970 in Margaret River, which is only a relatively new region by world standards. But we are owned by the LVMH Group, international group based in Paris. And it's basically a luxury group, and most people would have heard of it. And I guess that provides us with worldwide distribution for our wine, as well as a very strong marketing background and a strong branded image for our products.
Rob's a good friend with David Honan, who we talked to just a few minutes ago, who was one of the founders of this winery, and now buys a different product from David.
Yes, David's always had a passion for quality. He's now venturing into his own wine business, but on the side he grows some fantastic lamb and pork and venison, of which I'm probably one of his best customers. Maybe I'm flattering myself saying that, but I consume quite a lot.
Well, we'll come back to that, but listeners, here's a measure of young Rob Mann's prowess. LVMH had a winery in California where the winemaker quit a month before vintage. So guess who they called?
Yes, it was quite a surprise, but I was sent over to look after the Newton Winery in the Napa Valley for the 2007 vintage, and it was certainly an amazing experience. Hard work, but very valuable.
And did you make some friends in the wine business while you were there?
I did make quite a lot of friends. It was pretty hectic most of the time. 10 weeks of vintage working 15 hours a day. I didn't get a lot of time to socialise, but there certainly were a few occasions to get out and meet a few people, and a very generous and welcoming part of the world.
Well, we just sampled a lovely Chardonnay and then what Rob calls his oyster wine, which is a Sauvignon Blanc Semillon blend, which he also says will go great with asparagus and artichokes and other really difficult wine pairings. But take us through some of the rest of the Cape Mentell portfolio.
Well, we have vineyards up to about 37 years old, and the region of Margaret River was originally established because of its similarity to Bordeaux, and hence we grow the Bordeaux red varietals and white varietals very well. On top of that, Chardonnay and Shiraz have a particular fondness for this area, and I guess our core products are within that bounds. There's a Chardonnay, a Shiraz, a Zinfandel, strangely enough, due to David Honan's studying at Fresno University for his winemaking degree. We make a Cabernet, which is our flagship wine, and a Sauvignon Blanc Semillon blend, as well as lots of other experimental lots.
Yes, there's a Marzan Ruzan on the table in front of us. Is that a new combination?
I guess it's part of a young region where we're looking at what other varietals are suitable. So we have some Marsan, some Roussan, some Viognier, Sangiovese. We've always had some Zinfandel. Looking at some Pinot Gris, and I guess it's our job as winemakers to sort of test the limits as to what works and what doesn't. Looking to the future as what's going to be successful in this region.
So I think David also mentioned there's some Grenache and there's some Mourvèdre, which you call Mataro, that's hereabouts as well. So you're making some of that blend also?
Yeah, we have a strong Rhone portfolio of Shiraz, Grenache and Mataro. Rhone whites, the three, Viognier, Marsan and Roussan, and they're particular of interest to me because I spent the last 7 years making wine in McLaren Vale, which has a fabulous old Shiraz and Grenache and Mataro, and so it's very interesting from a winemaker to transfer what you learnt from a very different region, being McLaren Vale in South Australia, and apply the good bits, what you learnt, to a completely different region.
Now, and this young man said he's also making prosciutto di Parma in the basement, and he cooks for the staff on Sunday. It's just hard to figure out what he doesn't do, but Anne has a question. Oh, Anne does not have a question. Maybe that's what it was about. So there's some cooking in there too, Rob, right?
Yeah, it's part and part of the healthy lifestyle of great wine, great food, great art, music, people. I've grown up around fabulous cooks. being my mother, my auntie, my grandmother, all of my cousins are chefs in restaurants or winemakers, so it's just part and part of, for me, a balanced upbringing.
So okay, now I'm going to really put you on the spot. So what's a dream pairing? Cape Mentelle wines you think are the best and the foods that will go with them that would be your favourites?
Cape Mentelle specific wines or worldly wine?
You make Cape Mentelle wine, so I'm going to put you on that spot.
We've been playing with Marsan and Roussan, and when I was in Conrio about 3 or 4 years ago, we were on the banks of the Rhone, and we had some Saint-Joseph Blanc with Fleur de Courgette, and it was a magical combination of that crunch and texture of the batter on the zucchini flour and the soft floral centre, and it sort of matched perfectly with the Rhone white. And so I guess great combination here would be a Marsan Roussan with a stuffed zucchini flour, deep fried. That sounds.
And how about for someone who's prejudiced and thinks the only real wine is red?
There's lots of good red combinations. Particularly, we find here we have some fantastic local venison, which is very lean, but it has a lovely, vibrant and gamey texture. And with a young spicy Shiraz, it's a really good match. And even a Shiraz that has about 10 years of age on it, when they start to mellow and they get a little more earthy and gamey in themselves, it's a good combination.
Now, we talked before we came on the air about the shift in the popularity of Australian wines. It seems Australian wines were all the rage in the United States, the biggest market for them outside of Australia, and then that seemed to sort of turn around. Does that mean a diminution of the quality, or is it just simply the market doing silly things?
Well, from an Australian perspective, there's been one wine that's had a huge influence on Australia's image in the American market, and that's Yellowtail, which is the biggest wine sold in the United States. And it's a great value wine at a low price point. And I think people's perception of Australia's wine is great value at a low price point. Our business is not a low price point. We're part of a luxury goods company. We want to make wines that have a definition, a certain style, a certain quality, a certain uniqueness about them that make them distinctly different from anything else. And in a market as diverse as the US market, it's increasingly a struggle to get those wines recognized for what they are.
So, listeners, you've got to line up behind it, because this man is very passionate about what he does. Cape Mentelle is the name of the brand. The website that will let you find out where it's in distribution in the United States is where, Rob? Do you know that offhand?
Yes, it's just www.capemantel.com.au.
And what you can do when you have a glass of Cape Mentelle in front of you is you can picture yourself sitting under an umbrella, under the trees, in the cellar door at Cape Mentelle on a sunny afternoon, having a wonderful time, which is what Anne and Peter are doing right now.
I have no idea why you... I guess it's my job to spell...
We are
here, obviously, and I think the Cape Mentelle, I'll spell Mentelle, which is Mentelle. So that's Cape Mentelle, all one word.
And it's about a 3-minute drive from the main crossroads in the little community of Margaret River. Listeners, it's a place you really should come. And Rob's a busy man, so we're going to have to let him go back to work pretty soon. But Rob, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
It's my pleasure.
Anne, as always, has a perceptive question to ask, and I want to append this to the interview. She said, Rob, what is it you'd like to do in the future? What's your ambition for what you'll perhaps be remembered for as a winemaker here at Cape Mentelle?
Well, I guess Cape Mentelle has a great history of producing wines, but I guess what we're looking to do is really define Cape Mentelle as a very unique and in a certain style. We're from a fabulous climate, which is Margaret River, and we want people to see that in our wines. But we also want to see want people to identify the wines as distinctly Cape Mentelle, and by that I mean having a certain style and presence that is uniquely different from our neighbours, but at the same time being representative of a very high quality viticultural area that is Margaret River. We produce a number of different styles of wine, and we all want them all to be very distinctly unique from one another. We don't want our Chardonnay to taste like our barrel fermented Sauvignon Blanc Semillon, nor do we want our Shiraz to look anything like our Cabernet. So within each wine there's a certain personality we want the wines to speak of.
So when you achieve that, will you be sure to let us know?
Well, I don't think one ever achieves it. It's when from one year to the next, your thoughts on what best expresses what you taste in the vineyard changes. So hopefully it just gets better from year to year.
But it sounds like a great ambition to me. What a great idea to say people will recognize this as a Rob Mann Cape Mentelle wine.
Not a Rob Mann wine, I think a Cape Mentelle wine. Because what we want to show is how unique our vineyard and our specific site characteristics of each variety is. And the winemakers should be playing second hand to the characters and integrity of the fruit. So that's what we want our wines to represent.
Well, what a thoughtful young man you are, and it's been an absolute delight to talk to you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Now it's time to take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. Remember to check out our whereabouts and what's new in the world of food, wine, and travel on our website, www.onthemenuradio.com, and email us, please, because we'd like to hear from you at any time. That's On the Menu at onthemenuradio.com. Next up, we're still in the Margaret River, and Rabbit, you're going to set up this next one, but I want to say I always love having dinner in the homes of these winemakers because they have such good taste.
Well, Dennis Horgan is a modest fellow, so he never really explained to us exactly how he got into the wine business, although he did tell us a story about it, which you'll hear in the interview. But Dennis is a very successful wine entrepreneur, the founder and still the CEO of the Lewin Estate Wine Company, probably the best-known wine in Western Australia, best-known around the world for their artist series.
Yeah, and his wife adores the selecting the art. She's the one who selects it, and then it's translated into their labels, and she has much of this original artwork hanging in their home, which is where we had this private dinner.
So it was a whole lot of fun, and I can't tell you because it's a secret, but we did drink a secret wine at the end of our meal with Dennis and Tricia as well. But let's hear from another figure very instrumental in the wine business in Western Australia.
But first, don't forget that while we were having dinner, there were kangaroos cavorting on the lawn, and for additional entertainment was that we had our birds.
Yeah, it was a chorus of kookaburras.
Kookaburras laughing at us.
Dusk was falling, but we were fine because we were drinking Lewin Estate Artist Series Riesling at the time, so feeling no pain.
Lewin Estate's Chardonnay Artist Series is one of the best-known wines on the planet currently, but it wasn't always so. And on the menu, of course, is on the track of all of these things, so we're meeting with Dennis Horgan, who founded this enterprise. And the first thing I'm going to ask him is where the name came from.
Well, Lewin Estate is named after Cape Lewin, which is the southwesternmost point of Australia. It's about 20-odd miles down the track from where we are. And a Dutch sailor came around the coast, looked at it, and it looks like a sleeping lioness. Lioness, of course, in Dutch is Lewin.
That's absolutely amazing. We're in about the most bucolic place you can imagine, in the middle of quite a number of acres, in a modern house that Dennis and his wife Tricia built for themselves. It's just a little piece of heaven, but it was a long time ago you started out building this.
Well, Lewin Estate, I guess, goes back to, I bought the property in 1969. We met Robert Mondavi in 1972. We got into the wine industry in 73. We set about producing wines that ranked with the best in the world. I like to think we've done that. We stopped and looked at what other things we could do to generate interesting wine. That was fine wine, because that was our mission. Food, because nothing complements wine like food. And, of course, the arts.
Well, we're going to come back to the arts thing, but your story about how you discovered wine is really interesting. So, listeners, if you never discovered wine, you can go about it the same way Dennis did.
Well, I met Robert Mondavi, who wanted to buy the place, and I thought, well, if I'm going to do or become involved in wine, I better know something about it. So I did a Rhodes Scholar degree in wine. And every time I went to a hotel, I'd buy a bottle of wine to drink at the bar.
But you say it was interesting because you couldn't buy it across the bar. You had to go around the corner to the hotel's bottle shop. Now, I should quickly explain in Australian terms, a hotel is a pub, and around the corner from the pub there would be a bottle shop where you could take your beer away, but you could also buy wine. So, Dennis, you continue the rest of the story.
Well, I used to buy the bottle of wine in the bottle shop, bring it in, and drink it at the bar. Unfortunately, I thought I could put the top on it and take it home. My friends started to drink wine. More people started to drink wine. And suddenly, it was a wine bar.
But you had a rule of thumb about what wine you bought.
Well, the rule of thumb was that I bought a bottle of wine and drink at the bar and a bottle of wine to take home. And I always bought the most expensive bottle of wine they had in the bottle shop, on the basis that I could put that down for a year or two, taste it, analyze it, and decide whether it was the type of wine that we wanted to make and how we would go about doing that.
Now, in Australia, a CPA is a chartered accountant. That's what Dennis is. But you can tell that Dennis is just a little bit different than your average chartered accountant. But how did you become, from an accountant, how did you become a wine entrepreneur?
I guess I was involved in practice. I had the largest untied practice in Perth. And I was interested in acquisitions, buying companies, merging them and what have you. And I'd bought a number of companies over the years. And one of the people I'd bought a company from came to me one day and he said, my next door neighbor thinks he's dying of cancer. Are you interested in buying his business? And the long and the short of it was I wasn't. But he said, but he's got a farm down in Margaret River. Well, I was a keen surfer and Margaret River is on the Australian or the world surfing circuit, in fact. We have some of the great waves of the world down here. And I said, I'm going down there surfing next weekend. Give me the address. I'll have a look at it. Long and the short of it is my wife fell in love with it. I had to buy the farm because of her love of the farm, I loved. And we bought the business and the farm. And fortunately, within a year, I sold the business for what it cost me for the lot, so I had the farm. But it was 500 acres then. It's now 1,650 acres. It's a beautiful property, right in a part of the world that's now regarded as Australia's finest wine-growing region, on the ocean. It's on a piece of land, actually, that broke off from the rest of Australia eons ago. Southern Ocean down to the south, the Indian Ocean out to the west, and the merger of that Southern Ocean, which comes up from Antarctica and the Indian Ocean, results in us having a very, very distinctive microclimate, and it's that climate that gives us all that we want.
Now, when you started, there were very few wineries here, a handful, and there are now more than 2,000, I think you told me.
If you look at the Australian scene, there's some 15 companies that produce about over 85% of Australia's wine, and there's over 2,000 that produce the other, well, say 14%. We produce 0.05% of Australia's wine. Having said that, we're focused very much on the quality end, and this little region we're in, Margaret River, produces 3% of Australia's wine, but it produces something over 20% of the fine wine of Australia. And it does that because, firstly, we were one of the five founding wineries in Margaret River, and people were focused on quality, how to produce great wines, wines that people would really appreciate. And I can't tell you enough about the trials and tribulations that they went through to do this, but they did focus on that. And as a direct result of that, we produced great wines out of Margaret River, and there's probably 200 wineries here in Margaret River now, but they're all small. I mean, all eager beavers that are burrowing away with their family businesses, trying to produce wines, as I said, that rank with the best in the world. We've done it, hopefully the rest in the world.
Now, there are a couple of other fascinating components about what you're doing here at Luna Estates and some plans for the future. So you mentioned that right after the tsunami event around Christmas time a couple of years ago, you persuaded Sting to come down and give an additional day of concerts. You've had the London Symphony Orchestra here. You're a great wine collector as well. These are some additional components people can enjoy if they come here.
Well, we set about a mission, as I said, to produce wines that rank with the best in the world. But when you stop and look at that, how do you do it? How do you interest people to come to the most isolated winery in the world? And we said, well, it's all about fine wine, our mission. Food, because nothing complements it better than food. But you can't have a two-legged stool. It's very hard to sit on it. Turn it into a third leg. And that was art. So So we started with art on our labels. We have something like 140 original works of art that have been on our labels over the years. And then in 1985, we looked at taking it to another step where we had musical performances. So we had the London Philharmonic Orchestra. We had four international orchestras, people like Ray Charles, Dionne Warwick, Dinah Ross, Dame Kiri DeCarnua, James Gore, George Benson, Julio Iglesias, Tom Jones, right through to Sting, where we raised some $5 million because of the tsunami appeal, where it hit Asia, and we felt very compelled to do something about helping those people up there. And Sting was coming down to do concerts, which had been previously sold out, on the Saturday and Sunday night, so he came down on the Thursday night. And we had this marvellous concert, as I said, raised $5 million for the cause.
Now, there's more in the future, because you said you're planning some things to make it an even more interesting place to come.
Well, we've now got 1,650 acres. We've planted about 360-370 acres of grapes. And we're looking at where to from here. We've come to the conclusion that we could put five-star accommodation on the place, and we put a golf course, and make it even more interesting than it is now. And that's an advanced stage of planning. I'd like to think the accommodation will be up within 2 years, and the golf course maybe another 2 years after that. But because we're in such a beautiful environment, we have, for instance, 85% of our rain comes during the 6 months of winter, 15% during the 6 months of summer. But we get 40 inches down here, so we get 6 inches during summer. But it's enough to handle our grapes. We don't irrigate or anything like that. So it's all a very natural environment. In winter, pours down, but it's all over in half an hour, and then you get beautiful sunshine again. So it's just a lovely environment. We don't get frost. We don't get freezing weather or anything like that. It's just a marvelous place to live, to visit, to enjoy.
So you'd call it a really God-kissed region, and you'd say, if you didn't come here, you missed something?
I'll go further. I signed a little note to someone today and said, thank you for visiting.
We're going next from one of the largest winemakers in the Margaret River to one of the smallest, a winery called Piero, named after the male lead in Piero and Columbine, for reasons that were not entirely clear to me. And we met the winemaker, Dr. Michael Peterkin, but he was too busy with vintage and doing all kinds of other stuff. So Helen Gaunt, who helps him to manage the winery, actually talked to us and told him something of the story. But before we get started with that, Helen was also a great resource in a slightly different way, and that Anne wants to explain.
Well, I want to say, of course, the doctor, the good doctor, was busy, but he had time to look at my rash and check that out. So that was a boon. And then the next thing was, of course, that talk about kismet or fate, as it would have, you'd have it. Somehow I mentioned my best friend in Australia's name that I had, when we lived there, she had been my best friend, and I lost track of her, but I mentioned her name, and sure enough, Helen Gaunt, that we were interviewing, realized that this was a person she knew who taught Tai Chi in Perth, and gave me her information, and Helen and I are now, we never got to catch up because Helen was actually in Canada at the time, we were in Australia, due back after we left Australia, but we now have exchanged information, and it's cool, we're now back to being friends and exchanging our experiences again. So, but back to the wine, Helen certainly had a lot to contribute. Helen Gaunt, or Gaunt, rather. My friend's name is Helen Phelan, so I'm getting the Helens all confused here. But let's go back to the wine story, Rabbit.
So anyway, Helen Phelan, if you're listening to this, hello from your old boss, if you can remember that far back. And let's pick up the interview with Helen Gaunt of Piero.
Dr. Michael Peterkin had a passion, and it was not a passion for what he was doing in medical school. It was a passion to do something different. And we just heard the story of that from Helen Gaunt, who is the executive manager of Piero Wines. There's some spelling in there, Helen, that we need to do just to make sure that people get it right. So let's start off by spelling the name correctly.
P-I-E-R-R-O.
And we're in the Margaret River region, but a little off the beaten track.
At Willy Abrup.
Willy Abrup is about 15 minutes from beautiful downtown Margaret River, correct?
Correct, yes. It's a beautiful little sub-region of Margaret River.
And here they make the most delicious wines, both white and red, but both quite specialized.
Yes, the Piero Chardonnay and the Piero Cab Sav Merlot Reserve are two of our outstanding wines. And we make a whole range of other wines as well, but these are our two best-known wines.
You told us that you were also in the medical profession too, until you got bitten by the bug for growing grapes and making wine too.
Yes, that's true. That's true. And I'm glad it happened. So I did have an interest in drinking wine, but then I decided to take that a little further on having met Michael and his father-in-law, Kevin Cullen, who worked in a medical practice with me in Busselton. And I was lucky enough to have purchased some land in Margaret River at the time and spent a lot of time talking to Mike and Kevin about grapevines and grape growing and drinking beautiful wines of the world, so I thought I might like to be part of that. And Mike kindly offered to buy some grapes off me as a grower for Piero if I was to meet the high standards that Piero required.
Now, you do a couple of rather special things that aren't just the regular way of growing grapes before you even begin to make wine, and you are telling us about that. But tell us some more about this thing called canopy management.
Yeah, sure. As I said to you, that Mike would tell you that there's 100 steps in making a wine such as the Piero Chardonnay, and that begins out in the vineyard, and we have great pride in our vineyards at Piero. And the high density canopy management is not something which is very common, and the inspiration for that was the famous vineyards in France. And as time has gone on and we've learnt more about canopy management, we understand that this high density canopy management provides a very healthy competition within the vineyard to promote beautiful flavours in the grapes. And we work by hand doing a lot of things out there to open up the canopy during the season to promote those flavours right from when the berries first start to develop. And ideally in Margaret River, the vineyards are planted in a north-south facing aspect, so they have optimum sunshine in the morning and shade in the afternoon, which produces a beautiful air conditioning effect within the vineyard, which we know helps with the flavour development and the acidity in the berries.
So these are both really quite unique wines, a representation of, in the one case, Burgundy, in the other case, Bordeaux, but with fruit grown in the soils and with the weather of Western Australia. But you said that people are recognising the quality here, even though you don't enter lots of competitions, so the ratings are high?
Yeah, that's absolutely true as well. You know, we have relied a lot over the years on what our customers tell us, and we do have those coming to the winery every day of the year to try our wines. And we follow very closely what the press like to say about our wines as well. So we do send wine on request to international press and the wine writers that have most acclaim around Australia, and do annual books reviewing wines from all around Australia. So, and we get regular press in all the top wine magazines and newspapers within the country. So that gives a fair indication of how we're going.
And the good news for you listeners around the world, in many countries in Europe, in Canada, not currently in the United States, although we're going to try and help fix that, you are going to be able to get Piero wines. Is there a place that people can come to find out where to go to find your wines in the different countries where it's available?
Absolutely. We have a website, which is the most common way of finding out information for people around the world today, which is www.piero.com.au. And on there, if you just click on it, the little subheading of distributors, it'll come up very clearly where the wines are available, with a contact number and an email address, or an address for those people in each country of the world and throughout Australia.
And that's P-I-E-R-R-O, no T on the end.
No T.
And a last thought for everybody, Helen, that you'd like to pass along.
A customer I was talking to out at the cellar door one day said, "Oh, that Piero Chardonnay, that's a special wine." And he said, "You know, it's quite expensive, but I think I'd like to buy it for a special occasion." And I said, "What is that special occasion?" And he said, "It'll be the day that I open it and drink it."
What great stories, what a great visit, and now it's time to take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
On the Menu with Anna Peter Haig. Again, we're still in the Margaret Valley. And
well, we were in the Margaret River. We're actually back home in Pittsburgh now.
But trust me,
we were away and we collected all kinds of fascinating information, including how a winery called Xanadu got its name.
Which is from a poem
called, well, it's I don't remember the title, but it's all about Omar Khayyam. And no, Omar Khayyam decreed a pleasure dome in a place called Xanadu, according to the poet whose name I can never remember, whether it's Samuel Taylor Coleridge or Samuel,
yes,
Coleridge Taylor.
It's Coleridge is the surname.
He was the guy who wrote the ancient Mariner too, right?
But
Xanadu was supposed to be a fabulous place, and Xanadu Winery certainly is.
Glenn Goodall. He's a footy fan, he's a surfer, but he also happens to be a winemaker. Glenn, welcome to On the Menu.
Thanks, it's good to be here.
Put those things in order for me, if you will, about the things that brought you to Margaret River, this wonderful piece of God-given real estate that we're sitting on today, and your hobbies.
Probably family first. My wife's also a winemaker, and she's from this area, so obviously it was a natural progression for me to come down here and have the opportunity to work in an area which would sustain two winemaking careers. But it's lovely to work in an area where you can get up and go for a surf before work in the morning, or go down and get some crayfish at lunchtime. And all in all, it's just a fantastic place to live, as well as a fantastic place to make some great wines.
Now, we were just chatting a moment ago about, you know, what's Margaret River like in terms of winemaking regions around the world. And we reached, I think, the same conclusion.
Yeah, well, we were trying to find some synergies between Margaret River and places in the States, and it sounds like the closest thing would be Northern Sonoma, where Margaret River has, you know, although there's some larger players in the region now, it still has that lovely pioneering sort of feel about it, and a lot of grassroots element. I think when you look at the community itself, even though wine and tourism is a big part of the community, you look at what built this community. It was farming and a lot of people come down here just for the surf, basically, and just to enjoy that sort of lifestyle.
So the big advantage over Northern Sonoma is it's a lot closer to the water, so you can surf. And you said, my record is I could do what?
With respect to surfing, or is that the crayfish? My record down here is during lunch breaks, 35 minutes to get down to the beach, swim out to the cray pipe, and get back to the winery, crayfish in hand. Can't say I always come back with something in the bag, but that's the record to date.
Now, did you catch a couple of waves too?
Yep. Things have changed a bit with daylight savings and three kids. I don't quite get out there as much as I'd like to, but there's some of the world-class surfing around here, and certainly at the end of vintage, one of the highlights of the wine calendar is the Interwinery Surfing Competition, which is an end of vintage mandatory competition to be in.
So who's going to be the winner there? Rob Mann from Cape Mentel must be quite a contender. I'm sure you're a contender too, otherwise you wouldn't be talking about it. So who holds the prize?
Cape Mentel's, they're pretty competitive, especially, Rob's culinary talents are probably better than his surfing talents. He's always cooking up a storm on the beach. Sorry, Rob. Voyager, they're the hot ticket for the surfing competition, but it also becomes just a great opportunity for the camaraderie between the different wineries to get together after vintage and just celebrate what's been a good vintage. And, you know, everyone's working really hard. So to get out down to the beach and have a few glasses of wine and a few beers and hopefully get a couple of waves in, it's a good opportunity to get together with our colleagues.
So everybody here is a competitor in a sense, because you're in the same business trying to sell wine, but you're all good friends too?
Yeah, absolutely. When you look at the region, you know, Margaret River there's several wineries in the region with some very high profiles. All in all, there's probably about 60 wineries in the region, I think, at the moment, and more labels than that. But when you consider that Margaret River itself, it's actually quite an isolated region relative to other regions within Australia. So, what's good for Xanadu is good for Western Australia. What's good for Cape Mentel or Voyager or Lewin, for that matter, is good for Western Australia. I think as a group, as a cooperative group between all of the wineries here, if we're all have got the same intention of making high-quality, high-end wine, we're promoting the region, and that's obviously helping each other.
Now, there's been a change of ownership recently, but there's also been a change of direction in the winemaking. Were you a part of that?
Yeah, I've been here for nearly 10 years now, so I've certainly been on the sort of the whole rollercoaster ride from what was originally a family-owned enterprise owned by the Lagan family and Irish doctors who came out from Ireland, obviously, in the 60s and founded the the winery. Then it went through a change where it became a publicly listed company, and it's really nice from a winemaking perspective to see that go come full circle back into family ownership, and now we're owned by a family again, the Rathbone family, who also own Yering Station in the Yarra Valley, Mount Langi-Giran, and Parker Coonawarra.
Now, what the portfolio of wines that you're producing, just quickly go through them for us, if you would, Glenn.
Essentially, we've got two ranges. One is our Dragon range. This is our entry-level wine. We have a Semillon Sauvignon Blanc blend, or Sauvignon Blanc Semillon, a Chardonnay, which is an unwooded Chardonnay, a Cabernet Merlot, and a Shiraz. In synergy with that, in our premium range, we also have a Cabernet, a Shiraz, Sauvignon Blanc Semillon, and a Chardonnay.
Now, where does the Viognier that we drank just now fit in?
It's nice to have little curios for sell it all for, you know, people who make the effort to come to the region to actually experience some other varieties and some other blends that we have, like with the Viognier and Cane Cut Semillon, and we've got a few other little experiments going on in the winery, which, they'll eventually hit the restaurant and sell it all. So, you know, if people make the effort to come to the region, they can try something that they wouldn't ordinarily find in their bottle store or their supermarket.
But if you find Xanadu in distribution somewhere, there's something of a difference in the winemaking philosophy between years 04 and before and year 05 and after, right?
Yeah, certainly. I think that's also reflected in some of the vintages that we've had as well. But say if we were to take one wine, for example, say the Chardonnay, whereas in the past the Chardonnay has generally been quite a big style with a fair bit of oak and malolactic influence, really trying now to make wines with a lot more elegance, tightness, and personality, really. There's so many good Chardonnays out there, for example, which are fantastic wines, and I think that's something that's put Australian winemaking firmly on a commercial map, particularly in, say, the UK markets, but also the US, where people are very pleased to be able to get consistent products. But I think people are looking for the next step now, and they want something with a bit of personality and a bit of individuality. So by having, say, less malolactic influence and less oak influence, and just trying to get the real site influence from each of the individual vineyards coming through, as well as things like a lot more natural fermentation using indigenous yeast or wild yeast, just to really try and give these wines a bit of spark and a bit of life of their own, and maintain that the pedigree that's been built from our own older vineyards.
So bring your bathers and your board, and Glenn will take you out on the surf, and then you can come back and enjoy some wonderful wines. Glenn, thank you so much for talking to us.
No problem.
And I want to turn to my left now to Shane Wilkinson, who's the general manager of this property, because he said something interesting when we came. He said, this isn't a winery, this is a tourist precinct. Tell us what you meant by that, Shane.
Oh, thanks, Peter. I think people know Margaret River perhaps sensibly for their wines, but Margaret River itself is a tourism region. It is 3.5 hours or so from Perth. But the region itself, as Glenn originally said, was a farming region, but now it's become a wine and tourism region where people come here not just for the wine, but for the whole tourism experience.
So here you can come here and you can make a day of it, right?
Absolutely. As Glenn indicated before, there are somewhere around 60-odd wineries around the region. But within those wineries, most of those have experiences within them, and whether that be restaurant or salad or with a range of local products available. We have, you know, the Margaret River region itself has things such as a chocolate factory, a fudge factory, as well as the natural surfing experiences and hiking and that sort of thing. It's a full experience now in the region rather than just a wine tasting experience.
But you're being a little shy. I mean, you're allowed to say we think Xanadu is a place where you should come and spend the day. So go ahead.
Oh, thanks, Peter. I was getting to that. Look, I mean, obviously our philosophy is you need to provide people with a full round experience. That's what we do at Xanadu. We provide not just the winemaking experience. We provide the restaurant. We provide the full round experience. So yeah, Xanadu offers itself a world-class restaurant with many, many awards. It offers world-class wines, again, with many, many awards. It offers a place where people from 6 months onwards to 80 plus years onwards can enjoy the whole Margaret River feeling.
I have to say that as we came in, Anne was admiring the scale of your rosemary bushes. She said, I never saw any that big and I never saw any with flowers on. It just gives you an idea how luxuriant, how fortunate this Margaret River place is. So I think both of you are very fortunate to be here. We're very jealous. We're
we're thinking about it as a place to come. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks very much, Peter. It's been a pleasure to have you here.
Nice week, Peter. Hopefully we'll see you back.
And now it's time to take another
break. break. This is a very elastic program.
I caught Anne sleeping there.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, we're going to move on to a very famous winemaker. Actually, who started this whole thing in the Margaret River Valley, Peter?
Well, I guess they're all kind of famous. Lewin Estates, we mentioned earlier, is probably the one that's best known around the world. The one that's probably best known around Australia is called Vass Felix, and it was at Vass Felix's vineyard in 1967 that the first vines of the modern era were planted in the Margaret River. And it turns out we got the story of their first harvest was a total disaster because the birds ate all the grapes.
And that explains why you have all those little dresses.
We'll do netting. It's called. We'll do netting in the future program if we have time for that. But here was an absolutely beautiful place with modern artworks throughout the property. A beautiful building, including a wonderful restaurant. We talked to their wine ambassador to the chef.
And did we run into any more surfer dudes? I didn't mention the fact that, although I don't surf, the waves are fabulous there.
No, their wine ambassador is a surfer dude, too. He admitted that's why he came to Margaret River in the first place.
It brings a lot of talent to Margaret River.
There's no question about that. So first we're going to hear from... as I said, the wine ambassador and the chef, and then right after that we'll go straight on to the winemaker, Virginia, who's a fascinating story in her own right, but I'll let her tell that story too.
Listeners, come to Vass Felix not only for the wine, which is wonderful, but also for the food. Executive chef Aaron Carr, who's known as the surfer chef, but in fact that might be why he came here pursuing the magnificent surf of the area. He is a fabulous, creative, exuberant chef. Thank you for a wonderful lunch, Aaron.
It's a pleasure. It's great to have you here at Vass Felix to enjoy the food and the wines and experience what Margaret River is renowned for. And yeah.
Now, you were born in Perth and you trained there?
Yeah, born in Perth, trained there for 4 years of my apprenticeship. In Australia, we do a 4-year apprenticeship. After that, I went to Europe and the US, doing a bit of traveling and surfing around and trying to learn more about food and cultures and eating on the streets of Asia and Mexico and sort of taking in all that sort of thing, and came back down to Perth and decided that I wanted to pursue surfing and cooking, and Perth not that renowned for its surf, so I moved to Margaret River and rest is history.
Now, how would you characterize your cooking? I think you said it was Mod Oz, because you've been everywhere and you sort of incorporated all these influences.
I suppose in Australia we're not really governed by borders as such as in Europe or the US, where we're sort of so many cultures in Australia, and we've adapted their food and they've taught us how to cook their style of food, and we've got so much produce where we can just use that. Asian influence is quite big in Australia, and so it's not really an Australian food as such as it would be maybe in Europe. French and Italian or Spanish sort of chefs cook their own region's food, but we sort of more cook the whole Japanese, Thai, Asian, modern European sort of style of food. It's all mixed up into one bunch.
What is your favorite thing to eat yourself?
Probably a barbecue and beer.
Yeah, well, that's good. We have this special menu that you did for us. Would you like to just talk about these dishes, which I might suggest should be requested to be matched with wine, which is what they did for us, and the wines were superb. But tell us the dishes.
The first dish we had was a roasted cauliflower soup with onion, caramel, and foie gras. So it was the cauliflower is actually roasted in an oven and then put into some chicken stock, made into a soup, a little bit of cream, fairly light.
Lots of cream, lots of foie gras. It was
Lots of cream, lots of foie gras. That's what it's all about. So, and the onion caramel just sort of gives it that little lift and that sweetness and that hint of richness as well. And tries to balance all those three flavors into one, one meal, one mouthful that sort of or works well with the wines as well.
And next up?
Next up, we had a beetroot tartatin, which is sort of normally used as a sort of dessert, but we're using beetroot instead of, you know, normally you'd use apples or pears or that sort of thing. So the beetroot tartatin with goat cheese ice cream, it's a little bit of a play on desserts being used as an entree. So, and that was with a pear and hazelnut salad, and again, just sort of trying to do things a bit differently, which what we're sort of renowned for here at Vass Felix, and trying not to follow the same lines as all the other wineries, and trying to be a little bit sort of left of centre, and you know, using local autumn produce when it's at its best.
And then for our main,
The main course was a rabbit schnitzel with celeriac silk, the Serrano jamón from Spain, and a mustard mascarpone. So it's the rabbits are whole; they're braised in the oven for so 2 or 3 hours, and then we pick all the meat off the bones, sort of mix that all together with the cooking liquid, and then let it cool, cut it into a disc, crumb it in some breadcrumbs, and then we call it a schnitzel. It's another sort of a Australian twist on turning schnitzel into something more sort of gourmet, I suppose you'd say.
There are all these little surprises on the menu, such as with the beetroot tartatin. Then we had goat cheese ice cream along with beetroot essence, and then we had there was the other thing that was there was some other item here that just threw me for a loop here. Now you put in the onion caramel into the cauliflower soup. Your dishes are full of surprises, and they were also beautifully presented.
Yeah, I suppose the onion caramel was just to add a bit of a lift to a not a plain soup, but a fairly light soup where it's sort of, you know, just a nice creamy cauliflower standard soup, but the onion caramel gives it that really good lift of sweetness and sharpness which would otherwise not be there. So and the foie gras are obviously quite, you know, fatty and rich. It sort of balances that, you know, that acid with the cream and the butter, and trying to get that balance like you do with wine, trying to balance the acid with the, you know, within the wines, not too acidic and not too, you know.
Well, you're frequently called the best chef of the Margaret River Valley, and also the food at this restaurant is the best. You still, though, fit in the surf, and I understand, in the morning and after work.
Yeah, weather depending, I try and, you know, fit in as much surf as possible. It's the reason why I'm here, and, you know, the lifestyle is fairly important to, I think, all of us that live in Margaret River. We live here for the lifestyle, and luckily the works here for us. The wine and tourism side of things are quite huge now, which is obviously why you guys are here. So luckily we have a bit of everything. We have lots of work and lots of surf, and you know, it's a great all round sort of lifestyle.
And everybody's very happy. I'm going to go and check out the surf after lunch.
So listeners, you can picture Anne out hanging 10 on her board, side by side with Chef Aaron.
I think that's actually all I was going to ask about of our chef. So with that, I'll sign off. Thank you very much, Aaron.
Pleasure. Thanks for coming.
And we can't conclude this interview without giving our host for the day, Michael White, with a Y, a chance to just add a final thought, Michael, about when people might come to Vass Felix, what fun they might have.
Oh, when you come to Vass Felix, it's a whole experience of the arts. We have an amazing gallery here with beautiful fine art that's from the Holmes Accord collection, the owners of Vass Felix. We also have a beautiful underground cellar. We have an amazing space just near the vineyard where we have a beautiful sculpture walk. And, you know, that all brings together a saturation for all the senses. It's just an amazing place to visit. It's small, it's boutique. The view is beautiful across the oldest vines in Margaret River through to amazing, majestic Karri forests and Jarrah forests. And it's just located about 2 kilometres from the coast. So as we know, you can go down and get to the beach in about 5 minutes, and it's just a beautiful place to visit Margaret River. So I'd recommend anyone to come through.
And you came down from Perth just like Aaron and just like a lot of the people here?
Yeah, I did. My pursuit was really more of a wine sort of thing rather than a surfing thing, although I do enjoy the beaches occasionally, but I just grew up, if you like, in hospitality and came to Margaret River with just wanting to enjoy the lifestyle here. And the thing about Margaret River is there's not a lot of people, and there's no traffic lights. You can enjoy a drive down Caves Road, taking your time, and there's going to be no one behind you tooting horns or anything like that. You can just enjoy your drive around the place, and it's just you, over the years, have created some great friendships with people that have similar interests, and there's never a dull moment in Margaret River, although we're a long way away from a large capital city and very isolated. We seem to have a wonderful community here, and that's sort of what the country life's all about.
The wines are delicious. Every food item coming out of the kitchen looked like something that I wanted to grab a piece of and try. So Vast Felix, listeners, just has to be on your list, and Margaret River should be on your list too. You're going to find out very soon, listeners, that Virginia Wilcock isn't really very shy. Virginia, you started out being interested in wine very early in your life, and tell us how it happened from there.
I guess my parents were always wine lovers, and we ended up getting a little vineyard just north of Perth with a couple of other families just to, I think, for my father to support his wine-drinking habits, really. And I guess that it became quite a passion for me, the grapes, the grape growing, and just the love of the country. And then when my father sold the vineyard, I was distraught, and I don't think I spoke to him for about 6 months, until he came home from work one day and found out that there was a university that taught winemaking and viticulture in South Australia. So I thought that's definitely what I wanted to do. So at 15 years old, I decided that it was what I was going to become, and I've not looked back since then.
And you talked about where you are now at Vast Felix in the Margaret River as being the pinnacle.
Yeah, look, Vast Felix is, I guess it's the first winery, first vineyard in Margaret River that existed as a commercial vineyard. It's had a reputation going now for in excess of 35 years. That might seem fairly young on a world scale, but it is the oldest in Margaret River. And Vast Felix has built a fantastic reputation over the years. And Margaret River is definitely the place that I want to make wine, and this is the pinnacle winery of a pinnacle region.
And you said you came here 15 months ago, so this is your second vintage. How did you get the job?
I was headhunted.
Okay, so you were that good, they came looking for you. Now, so you were where before?
I was working for a company called Australian Wine Holdings, and I was overseeing the winemaking of three small boutique wineries, making beautiful small volumes of wine for three different brands. And those wines started building a really nice reputation. And Vast Felix were looking for someone like me, I guess.
So do you think you bring something different, or are you just continuing the philosophy that was already here?
I think I bring a really boutique attitude to the winemaking environment. And I don't know, Vast Felix is, it's a reasonable size. It's still very boutique on a world scale, but it's a reasonable size for Margaret River producers. But I believe that all wines, no matter what volume you make them with the very best of everything you can, and you have that boutique attitude, and every bottle of wine should be as good as if it's coming out of a 50-ton winery to a 15,000-ton winery. I mean, Vast Felix is nowhere near that, but every single bottle of wine should be absolutely stunning.
Now, there are a lot of people who don't quite understand what you people who make wines just intuitively know. What I'm going to ask is if you could take three of your best wines and explain the characteristics of each wine that you're seeking, so that people who are looking to drink it know what the standards are.
Yeah, very difficult question. I guess I'm going to start with Cabernet, because Cabernet is a real passion for me. Cabernet is probably the most beautiful grape variety in the world, from aromatically and structure-wise. It's unique, and I think Margaret River has the capability of making the greatest Cabernet in the world. Aromatically, I'm looking for light herbal notes. I'm looking for things like sage, and I guess sometimes from different vineyards you get slight menthol characters, sometimes rosemary. There's just beautiful herbal notes in Cabernet Sauvignon, and every vineyard behaves differently. Structurally, I guess the beautiful thing about it, the palate of Cabernet, is it should land on your palate all soft and fruit-driven and beautiful, very elegantly structured, and then all of a sudden when you swallow the wine, all those tannins, they dry your mouth out. There actually it does have firm tannins, and it should have firm tannins. It makes it the most perfect food wine. But when you actually have those beautiful drying tannins, you finish your mouthful, and the perfumes of that Cabernet should still remain in your mouth. So you end up with all those beautiful herbal notes. The herbal notes in a Cabernet that's not perfect isn't backed up by beautiful deep berry fruit characters as well. I think Margaret River's got the capability to have the beautiful deep berry fruit characters with those beautiful herbal overtones. And I think that makes Cabernet particularly special. I guess something else that I think Margaret River is not very well known for on a world scale, because it's very much an Australian market thing, is a Semillon Sauvignon Blanc or Sauvignon Blanc Semillon blend. Now, a lot of people in the world don't know about it yet. I think they will in the next few days. But I think we've actually mastered a beautiful blend. And it's not, we don't make a Sauvignon Blanc that looks like a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, what people understand a Sauvignon Blanc to be. We don't make a Semillon, which I guess famously in Australia from the Hunter Valley, it's got grassy, beautiful, thistle-like characteristics. When we actually put together our Sauvignon Blanc with some passion fruity notes, with our Semillon that's actually got thistly grassy notes, we put the two together and we get this amazing, complex, beautiful aroma. And we have this lovely, fresh, linear acid that's just polished. It's clean. It's a really refreshing wine. And I think it's overlooked, because a lot of people just like to drink it day to day, but it's particularly special. And I guess the other one is Chardonnay. Margaret River does make absolutely stunning Chardonnay. I think it's probably one of the only regions in the world that does Chardonnay and Cabernet. You wouldn't expect anywhere to do Chardonnay and Cabernet together brilliantly, but it's the unique climate of Margaret River that allows us to do it. Our Chardonnay fruit is intense. It's got really rich fruit characters, from the white peach, light pineapple notes, and you also get some lovely lemon, limey, citrus notes coming through. Now, I guess with Chardonnays, I like to see some fantastic complexity. Unwooded Chardonnays don't turn me on in the slightest. I like to see, Chardonnay is a chameleon. It takes on its environment. So that little environment can involve beautiful French oak barrels. It can involve all the yeast that you add or don't add. We use mostly natural fermentation, which is the yeast from the vineyard coming through and fermenting our wines. We use various levels of solids. So when you, instead of racking a wine off very, very clean, we actually take a few solids with it. Now, what we end up with at the end of the day is a naturally fermented Chardonnay that's not polished and clean. It looks pretty wild and funky to start with. But then as that wine ages in the barrel, we stir it and we mature it in the oak. And you end up, at the end of the day, you end up with beautiful spicy French oak characters. You've got beautiful bready, doughy, yeast lees characters, and all those fruit characters that I mentioned before, the white peach, the lime, the citrus, and all those notes hit you. And it's complex. It's stunning. And then, of course, texturally, the yeast lees and the oak and everything have a beautiful mouthfeel. We do try and make sure that we have a nice tight acid structure with our Chardonnay, so they're not broad and flabby. They're just beautiful fine lines.
So there. And, of course, that's exactly what we said to each other as we drank these beautiful wines with lunch. They're available around the world, listeners. I'm guessing that the best way for people to find out Virginia would be to go to www.vassefelix.com.au, and that way you'll be able to find out how to grab it in your neighbourhood.
Absolutely. There is an export wine list on that on the website, and wines can be sent around the place, and there's also a distributor list for various countries.
And Virginia's in the middle of vintage, so we're going to have to let her go back to work. Virginia, just a last thought before we say goodbye?
Look out for Margaret River Cabernet, and particularly look out for Vass Felix Cabernet, because I'm going to challenge in the next few years that we are going to make the best Cabernet in the world.
So much talent, so much good food and wine, and now it's time to take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Oh, it's Ann and Peter Haig, and On the Menu still here. I think it should be time now that we should mention that we, in fact, did not do all this in one day, Rabideau. I mean, we spread out our wine tastings over.
Yes, we did. And the next place we went to was really interesting because they were ready to serve us lunch, too. We had just had lunch at... I think it was Bass Felix who went down just down the road to Voyager. Oh, maybe I got that wrong.
Right, Xanadu. No,
actually, we were at Xanadu. That's boy, every day got mixed up with every other day. So anyway, they wanted to serve us lunch, but we were not really very hungry, so Anne decided she would at least give them a wine pairing test.
Yep.
So she... Well, you go ahead.
Well, I mean, I ordered two oysters, and it was difficult explaining that I wanted just two oysters, and that's exactly what I wanted.
And that's exactly what you got, and you had.
And I drank it with their wine to make sure it went well, and it certainly did, and we had a good time. It was a really interesting place.
Yeah, this is a really crazy place because it says boldly on the front in what looks like a very ancient building that this building was built in 1996, and it's built on the model of a winery in South Africa, not Western Australia, but the reason for that will be explained shortly by a young man called Adam, who is the Cellador team leader who met us, and we also, in the same interview, got to talk to the chef, whose name is Nigel, who I think, I'm pretty sure he's another surfer dude.
I think there are a lot of surfer dudes. But I wanted to point out something before we get too far along, is that almost all these wineries have fabulous restaurants. They're open for lunch only, not dinner. And then you're on your own for finding dinner spots. But anyhow, this is a big part of the wine trail experience, is to test out all these wonderful, wonderful kitchens.
I'm going to... I actually got to install this remark here because, for lack of anything, since you just mentioned that the dinner is, now there are not a lot of choices in Margaret River because it turns out that most people have a heavy lunch and then they take care of their evening meal and in their accommodations or they don't eat very much at all. I should mention, however, that on another evening we did have dinner at the Lewin Estates restaurant, which is just beautifully set, beautifully decorated, excellent place to go, and they are open for dinner on Friday evening and Saturday evening because they're one of the few places that are open. Reservations are highly recommended, as is going there.
Look for the biggest flag probably that you've ever seen in order to find Voyager Estate. It's an Australian flag with a Union Jack in the top corner and a Southern Cross, great constellation of the Southern Hemisphere on it. But the most important thing about it is it's really big, so you can't miss this place. But there's some more things about Voyager Estate which are unique. Adam is going to talk to us a little bit about what some of those things are.
The whole Voyager Estate experience is quite unique. In Margaret River, there's no other place that can claim Cape Dutch architecture, which is... had a strong association with where the vines came from in WA, having come from South Africa. That was recognised by the owner of Voyager Estate, in Michael Wright, and he also has drawn from the whole South African approach to wine, and not just its premium production, but the way they like to present their whole brand to the people.
So what you've got here is a truly wide range of both red and white varieties, correct?
We certainly do. Our wine list consists of six whites three whites and three reds, and we have a few unique products available as well in the form of our BOC label, which at the moment presents us with a straight Semillon, whereas Semillon and Sauvignon Blanc is the more common combination for this area, and we're also featuring at the moment one of our museum wines in the 99 release, re-release of Cabernet Sauvignon Merlot.
The wine that's at the top of your pack right now is a red wine, Cabernet Merlot, that you think is going to get really fine ratings coming up very soon?
Yeah, certainly. Even the 2004 release of Cabernet Sauvignon Merlot has already achieved a review in its first week of release, whereby it's considered a nominee for the Wine Star Wine of the Year. But equally, our Chardonnay is grown in stature, and the 2005 vintage of Chardonnay is rated currently at 96 points with the James Halliday Wine Companion 2008 edition, and that's something that's quite highly regarded in Australia.
And we tried it, and it is. And Cabernet is coming up very soon in our future, so we're looking forward to that too. But what grabs you as you come through the entrance of Voyager is just this thing. I want Adam to go over it again and explain just exactly what this place is. It looks like it's from the Stellenbosch in South Africa, and the impression that it makes on you.
Well, I suppose as you enter, you first of all come through some fantastic garden landscapes based on again the gardens that are found in South Africa. They're meticulously grown, and hedges and roses right throughout. You approach a Cape Dutch architect designed building that is bold and white in its stature out of the ground, and shows all the unique characters of that Cape Dutch design. And you're presented with a beautiful cellar door inside, and a restaurant that's also featured in the building.
And not surprisingly, because On the Menu does food as well as wine, as we know. We're going to talk in just a second to Nigel Harvey, the chef, but I'm just going to take a brief time out here for just a second.
Sampling wine at wineries in Australia is a little bit different from doing the wine tour of California. First of all, you usually have a really wonderful restaurant at the winery, and Voyager Estate is no exception. Here's where you go. You sample wines, but you also stay and have a wonderful lunch. Usually it's lunchtime only. Some are open for dinner, most not. So have your late lunch, fill up. We're talking now to the executive chef of Voyager, Nigel Harvey, who has been in the business for quite a number of years, although he's not very old. You've just done it for a long time, Nigel.
Yes, I've been in the industry for 20 years. I started when I was 16. So, yeah, I am still learning, and I think it's one of the things about cooking that you're always learning every day, and you're learning by all different people, from your apprentices to the chefs that you work with to the people that have been in the industry that have started the industry. So every time you look at a menu or you open up a cookbook, something might come to your head and you might get rejuvenated and ready to start again.
You've got so much good product to work with, though. I mean, I'm looking at your new menu, which is about to come right out. Everything's so fresh and wonderful here.
Yeah, we are very lucky in Australia especially, and in WA, that we can take a lot of the ingredients that we grow in our own backyard and be able to put them into the menu. So because of the weather especially, like we have beautiful summers, really nice spring and autumn, and then winter. So we are, I think we're blessed in one way. We've got some amazing meat, amazing dairy as well from the cheeses. Half an hour down the road, we have Pemberton Marron Farm, where we can just go and get fresh marron. Down in Manjimup now, we can get Australian truffles. So, yeah, I'd say we're pretty lucky here in WA.
And you don't like to mess much with the ingredients.
No, my probably the way I look at food is you just take one main ingredient and then you just incorporate a few different things to enhance that and just bring out the flavour, and by not overpowering the main ingredient. So if you're wanting to have like a fillet, that making sure that you can taste the fillet, it's not overpowered by everything else. I probably look at the main ingredient, maybe three or four just little bits and pieces, just to give some a bit of a flavour and to make sure they're getting a dining experience and it's not something they can cook at home.
And you've been around wineries enough to know that your food matches up, because you also have a passion for wine.
Yeah, I think being in the food and wine industry and working for wineries, you need to know a fair bit about the wine side of it, because what we're trying to do here at Voyager Estate is give everyone a food and wine experience. That's why we've interviewed a couple of put a couple of things on the menu, like the wine flight, which we do with our seafood assietto or our Cabernet, where we will get three of our white wines and we'll incorporate that into one dish, so the diner can have the holy dining experience by trying three different wines on one dish and getting three different flavours, and they can mix and match it the way that they choose.
Now, the new menu, it sounds really so enticing and unusual, but you say that your signature dish is this Voyager Estate Seafood Assiette, which is a sampler plate. What's on that?
The seafood assiette, what we try and do is it's like three seafood on what we're doing with this one at the moment. It's got roasted prawns with a shredded crispy fried pork with an orange compote, and then you've got scallops which have been crusted in popcorn with a green pea pesto, and then the Pemberton marin, ponzu sauce and pickled ginger. So what we've done there, you've got three different types of cooking flavours, and then we'd be matching that with our Semillon Sauvignon Blanc, our Chardonnay, and our VOC Semillon. So using the wine flight to incorporate the meal. So again, we're giving some people a bit of education as well so they can try the wines and try the food without having to have a bottle of wine for just, or a glass. They get to try three glasses. And so they really get to be able to learn themselves and to try and pick different flavors that they like.
Well, I mean, here's somebody who, I mean, I really relate to because he's very creative, but he's also very down to earth. You don't have to be nervous about any of his dishes. You know they're going to be delicious. Remember, listeners, it's Voyager Estate in the Margaret River, and just go online, and the website is
www.voyagerestate.com.au.
And come wander through the gorgeous gardens as well, filled with roses and blooming rosemary. And I like it here a lot. Thank you all.
And to close on a slightly different note, I thought that I understood what the biodynamic meant. And as I talked to our next guest, I understood nothing about what the real history of this in this area is, and everybody else seemed to know about it but us. But now we know about it, and you're going to know about it too, so just listen up.
Yeah, hang tight. This is the Cullen, C-U-L-L-E-N, winery. The last one we visited in Margaret River, not because it was the least well-known or the one we were least interested in. It just happened that way, and we were late. So unfortunately, we didn't get to talk to everyone we wanted to talk to, but we did get a fascinating lesson in how a winery can reinvent itself through using an approach called biodynamic.
Trevor Kent, whose title is Production Manager at Cullen in the Margaret River region of Western Australia, says when it comes right down to it, it's all about the wine. It's all about making the Dinah, Madeline, Cabernet Merlot the best wine it can be. But not everything was good in Happy Valley back in the late 1990s, Trevor, you told us, until you started to do something radically different in your cultivation process.
Mm-hmm. We found that the soils were becoming very low in organic content and heading towards straight mineral mediums, and there wasn't a very good uptake into the plant, into the vine. So we looked at ways in improving our vine performance. Our yields were dropping down to unsustainable levels of around 0.75 tonne to the acre. So we looked at converting the vineyard to organic practices as to try and increase the organic content in the soils and improve the vine's performance.
Now, did you find that other people surrounding you, their vineyards surrounding you, were they experiencing the same thing, Trevor?
Perhaps
it's too hard a question and really not sure because they kept it a secret.
Difficult to speak for other people's performance. I think there's been a general trend in Australian viticulture anyway towards minimal inputs, if you like, or reducing the inputs into the system. So it's difficult to say whether there's been a drop for other people.
So the first thing was organic. So that started okay, but then Vanya, who's one of the current owners, discovered something else.
Yeah, she went to a conference in Rutherglen in late 2003 that was hosted by Biological Farmers Australia, highlighting biodynamics. And Vanya recognised that this was a very much more proactive form of organic farming and that would achieve better results in the long term.
Can you give us an example of what's biodynamic rather than just organic?
Biodynamics is an organic system of farming that was started by Dr. Rudolf Steiner in the early 1920s. He is a philosopher, believes has a very holistic outlook, and with regard to farming, he believed that you should take into consideration the whole of the universe, the astral universe, the spiritual world, and the physical world that we actually farm in. He uses a combination of preparations, homeopathic preparations, and gives consideration to astrological events. These are used to time activities in the vineyard.
Now this is now Anne knows something about this that I must confess I don't know. Sweetheart, is there something you'd like to add there?
No, I mean I find it fairly unusual actually in the production, being fairly new age myself. I've never heard it applied to growing grapes than making wine before. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Probably the best known part of the biodynamics farming techniques is the preparations, and the main one is a preparation 500, and that is produced by packing cow manure into cow horns, and then they are buried in the ground for 6 months, and a transformation occurs where when you bring those cow horns out, it's no longer looking like manure, but is actually quite a pliable, rubbery substance. We then use that preparation and mix it with water, and we put it through a flow form to dynamize it. It activates the preparation, and it's sprayed out onto the vineyard. Preparation encourages more microbial growth in the soil, and this stimulates a better transfer of nutrients to the plant in the soil, particularly at the root zone.
It sounds so obvious. I mean, did you ever ask yourself, well, why isn't everybody doing this?
Yes, it is, I think, a leap of faith to take on biodynamics, and a lot of people are sceptical, and that's fair enough. It's very difficult to possibly scientifically explain Dr. Steiner's theories, but in a practical sense, we've seen really good results in our vineyard. Our yields have gone from that 0.75 tonne to the acre back up to around 2.6 tonnes to the acre, and we believe that our fruit quality has actually improved dramatically.
Now, the flagship wine we already mentioned, and that's the one that you said is already very highly rated by the Langton's rating agency here in Australia, but there's a portfolio of other wines, Trevor, that you're involved in making too.
Yes, we also produce a very fine Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, Semillon blends. We purchase fruit from Bunya's brother's property, and they have quite a bit of Malbec and Petit Verdot, and we produce a red of that blend, which is quite unique. That vineyard is also practicing biodynamic.
I just feel like I need to jump in here and say that I am tasting. I've not tasted the Diana Madeline, the biodynamic. I tasted the organic. And I've also had this 2006 Mangan. Now, is that biodynamic? Well, it's extraordinary. So whatever you're doing, whether it makes sense to the average viticulturalist or not, whatever it is, it's the end result is working.
How about that for an endorsement, Trevor?
Thank you very much. Very much appreciated.
What was the one you tried there? It's Mangan, and it's Merlot, Petit Verdot, and Malbec, which is an interesting combination in its own right anyway. So you're playing a few interesting games with bringing great varieties together here at Cullen?
Yes, it's the new baby, the Mangan, and it's been a lot of fun putting that together. And it's quite a fun wine, very user-friendly, you might say.
Now, the first of the flagship wine that's going to be released following the biodynamic transfer is going to be out very soon?
The 2005 Diana Madeline has actually already been released and sold out. So we're into the biodynamic production for the vineyard. So from here on, hopefully all the wines will be biodynamic and show greater vitality, we believe, freshness.
So that's why we can't have any, because you've sold it all out. that's pretty rascally thing to do, Trevor. Anyway, for our listeners around the world, perhaps you just give us a website where people can find out about where Cullen wines are available around the world, because that's where all our listeners are.
Yes, Cullen's have a website. It's www.cullenwines.com.au.
And do you have a last thought for listeners across the world about Cullen wines or about biodynamics?
Actually, I find biodynamics very exciting. It's really a holistic outlook, and when you start to apply that to the rest of the activities in your life, you really see some dramatic changes for the better.
Yeah, I'm with you.
You recognize those silver laughing tones of Miss Anne saying goodbye to our friends at Cullen. And we're going to have to say goodbye to you. This is a marathon program, but we wanted to include everything on the subject of Margaret River in one program. So those of you who wanted a lot of it, got a lot of it. Those of you who got bored along the way won't even realize that we're now saying goodbye until the same time, same place next week.
Bye-bye.